Okay, so I'm talking about, this is section 3.4, fully nonlinear. Fully nonlinear equations. Oh, I should say first order. So we had decided that we're studying an equation that looks like this. It depends on x, x and Rn. It depends on u, because we're looking for a surface S is equal to those points x and then u of x, which will be a surface in Rn plus 1. It'll be an integral surface given as a graph of u. And this depends on the derivatives of u equals 0. We're trying to have a general procedure for solving such equations. And of course, what we should have is, given any procedure for any order equation, have a general procedure. That's why there's the topic of PDE, because there isn't any. It depends highly on the details of such a thing. But at least in first order equations, there is a theory, and at least a local theory, and that's what I'm talking about today. So let's see. I want to think of it as follows, and I just want to remind you what we did last time. Any such surface has a normal. And the normal n is going to be, I want to point the upward pointing normal, so it's going to be the vectors minus dx1 of u, dot, 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 normal, let me put it normal at a point, at point x0. It has minus dx1 of u at x0, minus dx2 of u at x0, et cetera, up to the last point where it's plus 1. And this is, of course, an n plus 1 vector in Rn plus 1. And so what we want to think is that, and I want to call it, I want to parameterize this by p. So I'm going to take p in Rn, and I'm going to say that this is minus p, that's the n, n first components of the vector, and 1. And then we interpret, and then and I'm going to say, I'm going to add a point x0, z0, I'm going to call that a point m0 on my integral surface. The PDE as a condition on the p's, that is, on the possible normal vectors. So that says that f of x0, the height z0, and then plug in p has to be equal 0. And that's one relation, and p, and p, p unknown, one condition, p unknowns, so there should be a p minus 1 parameter family of solutions to this. So to solve this, one relation n unknowns, there's an n minus 1 parameter family, n minus 1 parameter family of solutions to this, so of such p's. And we can think of that, well, we're not in general position, I mean, it's not the general case, but we can organize so that the nth one is specified by the n minus 1. So let's call p is equal to p1 up to pn minus 1, and then finally pn. I'm going to call that p prime and then pn. And let's pretend we're in the situation where I can parameterize this n minus 1 parameter family by pn as a function of p prime. So that's pn. So we have pn as a function of p prime, and is the solution of this equation. And that's where we were last time, but I was doing n equals 2. So I'm just reminding you, but doing the n equals n case. And let's see what that did for us. It allowed us to draw a picture. Oh, and I did, that's the normal. But of course, what's the tangent plane? Tangent plane at my point M naught. That point is, of course, X naught, and the height Z naught in Rn plus 1. And what is that? Well, that's I take all those Z's such that Z minus Z naught is equal to, how do I want to parameterize this? Yeah, I just wanted to say that the tangent planes are just z minus z naught is equal to, well, of course, it's partial, let's see, what is it? X minus x naught dot partial x u at x naught, right? Or this minus this equals zero, that defines the tangent, all the x's at that point define the tangent plane. So let me see if I do that. Here's a point m naught, and then I have this normal, I drew this last time, normal, so the tangent plane looks kind of like this. That's an allowed tangent plane. It's an allowed normal, so it's an allowed tangent plane to our surface, which is, I'll draw in blue, so the surface is going to be blue like this. Well, I made the tangent plane to the middle of the surface. My artistry is suffering. That's what I want it to be. That there's a bit of the surface. And that's the tangent plane at this point, M naught. And, but of course, there N is parameterized by P prime, I said. So there are other possible P primes. So here's another, here's N, another P prime. Here's one first P prime, and here's a second P prime. And of course, that has another possible tangent plane, which could be this. Would be that, and then we take the ensemble of these tangent planes, and I'll try to draw that in purple, and they have an envelope which forms a cone, in plus one dimensional space, and that's the famous Monge cone. So, all the possible normals give all the possible tangent planes. And those tangent planes move around as you move P prime, and they form an envelope. And I'm going to talk about that in a second. And that forms the Monge cone. And that's where we were last time, saying the Monge cone exists, and that's what it is. And what are the integral surfaces? They are these blue things, which at every point M naught have a tangent plane, which is tangent to a generator of the Monge cone. That's what integral surfaces are in n dimensions, n plus one dimensions, n dimensional number of x's. Good, that's where we are. So what I want to do is describe, so our goal, I'm going to come back to envelopes in a sec, but our goal right now is to describe integral surfaces. I'll be calling them S. So this is S, this blue thing. locally, at least, through solutions of characteristic ODEs. And so, even before I go further, I want to give you what the characteristic ODEs are. So So that's so that's a theorem. So it's my theorem 3.9. Which says let me think how many dimensions. Let's see, 2n plus 1. The 2m plus 1 dimensional system of ODEs that I'm going for. I'm going to introduce a word here because when we did the quasi-linear case, well, I only did two dimensions, and we determined characteristic curves. But I'm going to now determine, I have to determine x, z, because that's the value of u, but also p at the same time. So that's more than just a curve in n plus 1 space. It also determines the tangent plane in n plus 1. So those are called the characteristic strip. So there's a 2n plus 1 dimensional system of ODEs for characteristic strips, and the characteristic strips are going to be the following things. They're going to be x of t, where x is an n vector, z of t, that's the scalar, that's going to be the height, the value, the height of the graph, and along that, this is a characteristic curve, and then we also have to determine p of t, which is again an n vector, and that will determine the normal and therefore the tangent plane at each point of my integral surface. And what I wanted to say it, what it says determines determines an integral curve and its tangent plane locally. And the whole point of writing this down is I wanted to write those down, these system of ODE down. And I've run out of room, so I have to put it over here, but what can I erase? Nothing. So I'll put it over here. And that goes as follows. I have to, so this is my, I have an equation number, but unfortunately it doesn't correspond to any of your equation numbers. So I won't give it an equation number. It's as follows. dx by d. P is equal to partial P of F. I'm using vectorial notation, so I'll stop for the moment. I'll say dxj by dt is partial pj of F. And this, of course, I'd add x, z, and p. And j equals 1 up to n. dz dt is equal to P dot partial P F. This is again evaluated at X, Z, P. And which I can rewrite if you'd like in using summation. J equals sum J equals 1 to N of P J partial P J of F X, Z, and P. And that's n plus 1, I need n more, and that's going to be dp by dt is equal to minus partial, so pj dp is minus partial xjf at that point x, z, and p, minus pj partial z of f, again at this point x, z, and p. And our object is to, okay, so, and that's, these are my characteristic ODEs. And it's, my object is to derive them for you, to say why those are the, solving that solves the PDE. So let's see, it's useful to check that it works for the quasi-linear case, doesn't it? So let's just check this for the quasi-linear case. So let's see. For the quasi-linear case, it's not a general F. It's an F in which P enters linearly. So let's do that. We only did it in two dimensions, but we can do it in n dimensions. It says we have F is equal to A of X and Z dot P minus C of X and Z. And we're looking for this, and we're looking for this F of X U and DX U equals 0. And then we seek. Right? So, in particular, X, so the characteristic ODEs in this case are dx by dt is equal to the p derivative of f, which is equal to a. And so if you remember, we had dx by dt is equal to a, and dy by dt is equal to b. Well, and when n is equal to 2, I gave a1 the name a and a2 the name b. So just to check that that's consistent with this. And then we had dz by dt is equal to p dot dp of f. So that's equal to dp of f is a, and p dot bp of f is a dot p. So it's a dot p. Right. And then we had, right. And those are the characteristic equations. Oops, and they aren't. This is what these give us for the first two equations. And then the third equation is as follows. dp by dt is equal to, let's see, minus dxjf, so is equal to minus dx a dot p plus dx c, right, minus p dot dz of f, so it's minus p dot dz of f. So it's going to be minus p dot, what's dz of f? It's partial z of a dot p minus partial z of c. Okay? And my question is, does that correspond with what we knew from before, where we had, so my question is, does this correspond? Corresponds, question mark, where we had dx, I'm translating it into n-dimensional notation, our characteristic equations for the quasi-linear case. dx by dt is equal to a of x, z, and dz by dt was equal to c of x, z. So these were n many, and that was 1. Okay? And so I have a proposition to this effect. So we have to compare these, which are the translation of these, with these, which is what we had before. We had these before. Now we have these. Are they the same equation? That's my question. The answer, it's a rhetorical question. The answer is yes. I just have to show you that. Is everyone with me? So, proposition. Yes. Sorry?
I think that it's
something beside, it's probably minus. It's this minus this. Thanks. Yeah. Good. So the proposition is the function f itself of x y, z, p, sorry, I'm doing the two-dimensional case. The function x, z, p is an integral of the system of ODEs that I've called ODE up there. I should have given an equation number. One. An integral of system one. Okay? And if it is, that says, in particular, so if it is, let's now look at this issue. If it is, then if F is satisfied initially, if F equals zero initially, then F is equal to zero later on, and in particular in our quasi-linear case. So that is, if A dot P is equal to C initially, then A dot P is equal to C all along your characteristic curve. And so therefore, dz by dt is equal to C. You see what I'm doing? I can't reach anymore. I need a stool. If this is, if that's true, then all along the characteristic curve, A dot P is equal to C. And so this equation already checks. This equation, this equation also checks. So this is the same as this, and this is this. And then it remains to check the final equation. But in fact, P is equal to, what do I want to say? What I want to say is I don't want to check it now. I'm going to check it later when I finish my discussion of general F. I think I got a little ahead of myself. So what I've shown you is this subset of the quasi-linear ODEs is what we knew from before, given the proposition. And I have to come back and see why this is also going to happen along those curves. And that would just be a general fact. Okay? So back to this. So I need to prove this. So let's do the following thing. Let's take f of x of t, z of t, and p of t. Well, it's f evaluated along that orbit, and then we take a time derivative of it. We see how it changes, and an integral shouldn't change. So let's now just evoke the chain rule lots of times. So it's going to be partial x f dx by dt plus partial z f dz by dt plus partial p f dp by dt, right? And that, of course, I'm solving characteristic equations, which are the ones above, so I'm now going to plug in these dx by dt's, dz by dt's, and dp by dt's, so I'll find partial x f dx by dt is partial p f. And those are vectorial, so that's a dot product. This is a dot product. This isn't because z is a scalar, but this is a dot product. Plus partial zf. Now, what is dz by dt? You have to look up above, and it's p dot dpf times p dot dpf. And dpf, so then plus dpf times dp by dt, I now plug in minus dxf, and that's a dot because dpf is a vector, so as is dxf, minus p dzf. And dzf is a scalar, but p is the vector. Okay? And now let's see. Let me rearrange things. Oh, and now let me look at this. Dxf, dpf, dpf, dxf with the minus sign. That's what I want. Dzf, dPf times P. dZf dPf times P. So we're done. Very convenient. Hence, if F is zero initially, you solve along a characteristic strip, and F stays zero along that characteristic strip. Very good. In particular, and I just said it, but I'll say it again, in particular, if I start out with F equals zero and I'm in the quasi-linear case, I start out by saying that AXZ dot P minus C equals C, so minus C equals zero, and that's at X naught, Z naught, and P naught, and this is C evaluated at X naught, Z naught, that equals zero. Then at later time, as I move along the characteristic strip, A dot P is also equal to C, and then I plug that into the Z equation, and I find that these two, at least the first two n plus one components of my ODEs correspond one to another. Okay, so that's at least the picture, and I reminded you where we are, and that's the picture and the relationship to quasi-linear ODEs. So what I need to do is derive that fact. I just listed ODEs. I want to derive it. Okay? And furthermore, more than deriving it, I said the Monge cone is an envelope. So what's an envelope? So first I should say what an envelope is. So this is a derivation of characteristic ODEs. So let's see what an envelope is. Let's see. So I want to discuss an envelope of a family of. So I want an envelope. Of a parameter family of hypersurfaces. And what I'm going to do is study, in particular, an n minus 1 dimensional parameter family of hypersurfaces. And I'm going to call those hypersurfaces S of lambda, with lambda in some neighborhood in R n minus 1. But just to make a relationship with what we're doing, where is there an n minus 1 parameter family of hypersurfaces? It's because I have n many p's and one relation. And that one relation is f of m naught and p equals 0. So those n minus 1 parameters are me solving pn for p prime, you might say, to solve that relationship, at least locally, at least if we're in general position. If pn is not a function of p prime, like if you're on the sides of a circle, just change coordinates so they are. Okay? Okay, so let's see. So I'm going to have given these. So these hypersurfaces are given. These are going to be given by one function g, and that's going to be g of x and of lambda. And so it's going to be given by a graph. So I'm going to set z is equal to g of x and lambda. I'll put a semicolon saying lambda is the parameter, x is the variable. And remember, lambda sits in some parameter space, which I happen to have made it n minus 1 dimensional, and x sits in some neighborhood in Rn. And this is a graph in Rn plus 1. Okay? And the normal, if I have this surface, then normal. So this is S lambda, and then the normal to S lambda is, of course, n, well, I don't know, n lambda, which is equal to, what is it? Minus dx1 of g, evaluated at x with parameter lambda, minus dx2, minus dx3, so minus dx is a vector, plus 1, that's the normal that points up, at least. That's the one I gave. Okay? And now I want to say, I want to define what the envelope is. So the envelope solves the following additional equation. So I should be labeling my equations. Well, I guess it's too late today, but I have this equation for S lambda, and now I want to solve the envelope equation, so S envelope. I want to find S envelope, so that's also going to solve an additional thing, which is 0 is equal to d partial by partial lambda g of x lambda. And now lambda is a vector, so this is a vector number of equations, so let's label it j, and I need this to be true, j equals 1 up to n minus 1. And now let's see how many equations we have, how many unknowns. I have n minus 1 lambdas and n x's. So let me fix lambda and so I have n minus 1 equations and n x's. So if I have 6 lambda and I have to solve all these equations, I get a curve. So the solution is a curve. A curve, I don't know, gamma, parameterized by tau, say, depending on lambda. And what I want to do is vary lambda. Well, no. Yeah, and then I want to take a union of such curves varying lambda. And if I do that, I will get a surface, an n-dimensional surface. Because I have n minus 1 variables in lambda and the curve. So I'll make a family of such. I'll get. All right? So let's do that. So any, let me see how we do this. For any lambda, I have a curve of x's. So let's take for any x, I have a lambda. So let me solve for lambda as a function of x. So solve for lambda equals some function of x. Solve this. So that means lambda j is some function gj of the x's and n variables. J is equal to 1 up to n minus 1 again. And if I plug that into my equation here, then this defines the envelope surface, a hypersurface. S sub envelope, which is z is equal to that not only function g of x, but then you want lambda to be those lambdas, g's given by x's, g of x. And I want to check what properties that has, because I just did some manipulation, right? So what properties, the principal property. Right. Solve for this relationship. Solve this. So if I give you x, if I give you lambda, then there's a curve of x's. If I give you x, there's a lambda. Solve that. Invert that. So this is a plugging this into here is a solution of these n minus 1 equations. And I take that solution g, plug it into big G. That defines a new function of x. Doesn't have any lambdas in it anymore. And that is a hypersurface, which is given as a graph, which is exactly z is equal to the height of gx, little gx. Okay? And now I see it's mysterious. I just wanted, what's the principal property? Why is it an envelope? Well, let's try it. Let's take its normal, the normal to the envelope. The normal to the envelope is what? Well, it's equal to, I have to now differentiate this, so it's going to be minus partial xj of g at x and little g minus a partial lambda of g dot partial xj of little g. Let me say it this way, lambda l xj gl. sum over L's. Those are the first n minus 1, first n components, and then I have a plus 1 because it's the upward pointing normal. And then I look at my equation for being a normal, and it says the lambda j's are 0. So this term is out. So the normal is equal to minus xj of g at that point in question, 1. And now I want to go over here. And point out the normal. That's where it is. Drat. Where did I write down the normal? Here is where I wrote the normal. Here's the normal to S lambda. And here's the normal to the envelope. They're the same. So that's why this is supposed to be the picture, that you have a family of surfaces. Think of the tangent plane as a surface. And it has a normal, and the Mollisch cone is another surface. And what property does it share? At every point M0 at which they touch, they have the same normal. That's the property. So you can see as the tangent planes skim around, and they take, there's an envelope, which is the skim. And what's the property of skimming? It's that they have the normal. It's the same. Okay, now we know all about envelopes. Could be a family of anythings. G's are anythings. It's going to be a family of planes. Thanks. This is the guy who's looking ahead. It could be a family of anythings. Z is equal to G of X lambda. In fact, you solve the wave equations often by taking envelopes of families of light cones. But we're taking tangent planes. This blackboard talks about envelopes, and there's no PDE involved. There's going to be in this blackboard. I know you're waiting with bated breath. Returning to the PDE. we'll fix a point. M naught, so that's going to be a point on our integral surface. So that's going to be an x naught and a height z naught. And then we have one relation and an equation, a scalar equation. So that's f of x naught z naught p equals 0. And now I have to solve this. So as I said over here, to solve this, there are p many parameters and one relation. So you can solve for one of them, at least locally, one of them in terms of the other. So let's pretend that's pn. So out of this, I'm going to find p prime as parameters and pn a function of p prime as determined. So parameters. Parameter p prime, and then we determine pn of p prime. So that's, I should have over on the top board called those parameters p, maybe. I'm not sure if that would have been more or less confusing. So let's see. I'm going to look at what are the possible tangent planes. Well, those are z minus z naught is equal to sum over pj times x minus x naught, xj, x naught, the jth component, j equals 1 to n, well, how about n minus 1, that's parameter part, plus one more part, which is plus pn, which depends on p prime, xn minus x naught, the nth component. And that's going to be, so I'm going to define that to be my g, which is a function of x, and it's a function of p prime, and p prime is lambda, so p prime is the parameter. Okay? And now it's a little bit more elegant to redo the upper blackboard, well, at least in this particular case, in terms of differential forms. So in terms of differentials, we can do the following thing. My equation g equals z, I can replace by the dz is equal to partial x g in terms of the parameters x and p prime dx, or I'll say dxj and partial xj and dxj, sum j equals 1 to n. And then the envelope equations, so that's equation 1, envelope equations also have, I can also write them. So I've just written z is equal to g, and the envelope equations are 0 is equal to d lambda g, so I'm going to write those as 0 is equal to sum L is equal to 1 to N partial X J of partial P prime of G D X J, where the differential is the differential of that upper relationship. And where is the vectorial part? This is sum over L. DXL, sum DXL. And the differential part is P prime is PJ. J is equal to 1 up to N minus 1. And now let's look at what the equation for the tangent plane is. That's this thing. And so let's try it out on those two envelope equations, given that that's G. So try it out. Try this. We get the following. Let's see. DZ, this is Z, so I get DZ. So let's see, I'm getting a little short of space, but I get DZ is equal to. Now, when I take a DXJ of G, let's see. What am I doing? G is this, so when I take a dxj of this, I get a pj, right? So I get a pj and then a dxj prime for j equals 1 to n minus 1. So I get a p, only get a p prime dot dx prime. And the last term is special, because, of course, dxn gives me a pn, so I get a pn of p prime dxn. Okay. And now what's the analog of the envelope? So that was this. So what's the analog of the envelope equations? Well, again, I look at dpj of g, and that just pulls out xj minus x0j. Then I have to take out dxl of it, and I only get j equals l, and it works out that I get 0, that's the left-hand side always, is equal to dxj, that's from the xj present, but pn is again different. dpn by dpj dxn. And this again is again for j equals 1 up to n minus 1. And now let's compare this to relationship relationship. Let me see what it is. Let's just compare this to compare to f of m naught. That is x naught, p naught. Oh, sorry, x naught, z naught, and p equals 0. Right? Which says that if I take a p prime derivative, it says dp prime of f at my point m naught in terms of p prime and then pn of p prime plus partial pn of f, again at m naught, p prime and pn of p prime but times partial p prime of pn, that has to equal zero. Just the parameter derivatives of f. And that allows me, among other things, to say, well, now I can take the partial derivative of p prime with pn and express it in terms of f. That's pn in terms of p, so this is, oops, this is a, should be a partial. Pn in terms of p, and then that allows me to express the rest. So I find out, what do I find out? I find at the end that, just repeat, dz is equal to p prime dx, the inner product of those, plus pn dxn, dx prime, yeah, pn dxn, and then I find dxj is equal to, what do? Reading that, is equal to minus dpn dpj, and then I express that in terms of a ratio of partial derivatives of f. So I get plus dpj of f over dpn of f, dxn. And now let's put this back in terms of real objects like curves rather than just differential forms. So S is a surface that's going to be given by X and U of X. And on it, a curve whose tangent vector I'm going to try out on these differentials. So a curve, say, gamma of T. Then what does that mean? This means dz by dt is related to x by dt. So my first thing here says that dz by dt is related by to dx by dt. Dz by dt is equal to p prime dx prime by dt, right? P prime dot dx prime by dt plus pn dxn by dt. And the second thing reads, it says all the different j's are proportional to the xn with this constant proportionality. Some people divide by this, and then they have a differential form is equal to another differential form. But this one is always that same one. So all of them have to be proportional. A way of saying that is that dxj by dt is equal to partial pj of f. Right? Parameterize it. Well, if you parameterize by dxn, dxj by dxn would be this ratio. But then change variables, xn in terms of t, you get this again. And that allows me to substitute up in the top one. To say that dz by dt is equal to, what is it, p dot dx by dt, which is dx by dt is f, so it's equal to p dot dp of f. Now let's see how we did. We have all these ODEs written here, and I see the first equation, dx by dt is equal to partial pf, that's the first n equations. And I see the second line is dz by dt is equal to p dot dpf, that's this equation. So I've done the first two sets. So I have this and this. And I have one more to do. We're just doing this, but we have to interpret what the envelope says. That's what we're doing. So the last n equations. Remember that we're looking at the graph of x, u of x, when we're looking at the graph, these points in Rn plus 1. So if that contains the curve gamma of t, it's going to give us, what is it, x of t and z of t. But because u is there, it gives a relation between things. So let's see what that is. I have f is a function of x, u, and partial dx u. And now that's we're assuming it's satisfied, and I want to interpret that, and gamma is a curve along a solution set. And so what I'll do is, this has to hold for all x's, so let me differentiate with respect to x. And if I can manage to see my notes, that says for each j, d partial xj of f plus partial z of f dxj of u. I use the chain rule. That's that plus that. That I have to do this one. Plus partial pl of f. And I have to sum over l equals 1 to n. Partial pl of f. Partial xl, that's the entry here. Partial xj of u. And that has to equal 0. That always happens. And now pj is equal to partial xj of u on the surface. On my envelope surface. So pj is dxj u, so take anything that moves, take its derivative. So that says dpj by dt has to be equal to, use the chain rule, sum partial xj partial xl of u, l is equal to 1 to n, times partial xl partial t. That's equal to sum l equals 1 to n, partial xj partial xl of u. And what is dxl by dt? We have it already figured out in this list. dxl by dt is partial plf. So partial pl of f. And so we actually see something, that dp by dt is equal to this sum involving second derivative of u, but that's exactly this. And so since this has to be equal to 0, I just write this with a minus sign is equal to minus partial xjf minus partial zf times partial xju, but that's pj. And now if I look up on my list, which is here, p dot, which is that bottom line, is equal to minus dxf minus pdzf, that's exactly this. So that at least says if you have a surface, these have to be solved. The Cauchy problem. Now I'm running into poor Andre's time once I start talking here. But what I have to say is you solve these equations by solving the Cauchy problem. Ah, dear. Andre, what should I do? Should I talk about the Cauchy problem and then you talk afterwards? It's going to take me more than 2 minutes. Yeah. Let me limit it to 10 or 15 minutes, and then we'll have a short break, and then Andre will take as long as he wants, just as long as we can get the 5 o'clock train. So let me erase a little bit. And I want to talk about the Cauchy problem, because after all, we have to solve this. What I've just done is assume we have it solved. There are actually significant curves on the surface, which are to the generators of the, which at every point on the surface of the generator is the Morrison. So again, we're finding, here's n-dimensional space. These are the z's and these are the x's. x1 all the way up to xn, say. And we're given a point, well, and we've been studying things at a point m0, but what we do is we find a surface given m0, we're given x0, then we're given a height z0, so that gives us points m0, and then we're also given an admissible tangent plane given by n0, say. And then we found a piece of surface going through that. But of course, even fixing m0, we had a whole one-parameter family of tangent planes to pick out. So I haven't specified anything anything uniquely by any means. So one specifies solutions by giving additional data on a Cauchy surface. So the Cauchy problem. Stems is the following. You're given a PDE and you're given a curve. And I guess what did I call it before? I forget what my Cauchy curves were called before. C's or gammas? Gamma. So given a Cauchy curve. Gamma, so that corresponds to x is equal to f of s. Now I have to, and then z is equal to h of s. And now I have to say this is a curve in this space. So I'm going to say it's along this curve. This is going to be my gamma. But f is a vector. Right? Because fj, xj, j equals 1 to n. And then how many s's are there? That's right. It's n minus 1 because I can't draw enough dimensions to give you the feeling for anything more than 2, where the curve is a one-dimensional curve. But this is a Cauchy surface. I should say this is a Cauchy surface. I already made that mistake by looking at my drawing, where s is now in R, n minus 1, and that gives us a surface, and we're going to start our solution on that surface and carry on. So j goes from 1 to n, and s is a multiple variable. Okay, but it's not enough to give us the initial data. Well, we even just look at the ODEs, which I unfortunately just erased, and it's not enough data. It's not enough data because we had because we're looking for characteristic strips, not a characteristic curve. So we need data for dx by dt is equal to f partial pf. Dz by dt is what is it equal to? P dot partial xf. And dp by dt is equal to, now I'm getting confused, p dot partial pf. See, I'm getting confused. P dot partial pf. And d, but we also, so that we're specifying what x starts and how z starts. We need to know how to start p starts, which is minus partial xf minus p dot partial zf. So we need n more bits of information. And so what we need to do is also specify, so we need to specify a Cauchy strip, need to specify also a parameter family of values of P. So FH, I guess I have phi j of S. And I need to specify pj is equal to phi j of s. Again, j equals 1 up to n. and S will be in some neighborhood in Rn minus 1. So that's a Cauchy strip. But we can't specify any Cauchy strip because we have to start by solving the equation. So we have to start. So we must start with a solution of, because if S is not zero on that, you can't expect it to carry on being zero. We have to let's start with a solution of S, big F of, let's see, the X's are little f, F of S. The Z's is little h. And the P's are little phi, equals zero. On, now, what do I call a Cauchy surface was gamma, but a Cauchy strip, I guess I'm going to call a big sigma. So this has to be true on sigma. And but we have another thing, which is, recall that this, that it's the interpretation of a gamma is, has to be a piece of a graph of U. So we need, right? Don't we need to have U of F of S equal to H of S? That's what we specify. We are specifying. But if I take an S derivative of that, forget T, we're not even making a piece of curve yet. I'm just trying to get a compatible starting point. If I take an S derivative of that, that also has a relation. So that says S derivative of that says partial S, partial S of U better be the same as S derivative on the right-hand side, which is supposed to be partial S of H. But if I use the chain rule on partial S of U, that's equal to partial XJ of U. It's equal to a sum, J equals 1 to N, partial XJU, let me sum over L. L equals 1 to N, so derivative with respect to SJ is partial XJU of F of S, partial SJ of F. And we have to satisfy that as well. Okay, so with these conditions in mind, so we have two conditions, I guess. We have this. We have to start out with a solution, and we need it. We need our choice of tangent plane to be compatible with our choice of height as we move S's around, not yet T. So with this in mind, what we have to do is solve. So let's do the following. Fix M naught is my starting point, X naught, Z naught, and solve for. So the question is, can we solve for phi in a neighborhood? So solve for. For these two equations, solve locally in S. For F, H, and phi near S naught. And the question is, can we do so? Is it possible? Because it's a nonlinear equation. Is it possible? So that's proposition 3.11, and it will give a condition under which we can, and that's the condition of being non-characteristic. So it says the condition that this thing. Take the determinant of an n by n matrix. And on top you have partial FJ partial SL. And there are n many j's and n minus 1 many l's. So it's an n minus 1, it's an n by n minus 1 matrix. N minus 1 by n matrix. What do you say first? The height. An n minus 1 by n matrix. And on the bottom, you put partial pj of capital F at that point in question. X naught. Oh, and you want this at S naught. And at this point, you want M naught. And you want this determinant to be non-zero. And if it is, and if it is non-zero, that implies that there exists a solution for phi of S given, well, we've been given x of s and z of s locally. Locally meaning for s in a delta ball around some initial point s naught. And the proof is the implicit function theorem. So the proof, this is the non-degeneracy condition in the implicit function theorem. So I'll just say that. Implicit function theorem, you check. You check that. It's that at that level. And now what you do is you solve, once you've been given a characteristic strip, you solve, because I have to solve the Cauchy problem. So you solve the characteristic ODE. Which I have on the board. I guess I still have them here. These ODE. You solve those, and, well, standard theory has that you can solve them for some small epsilon. So, you just set time to be start at zero. So for minus epsilon naught less than minus epsilon less than t less than epsilon. When, of course, S is in the ball radius delta around that starting point S naught we had somehow chosen. And out of this we find what? We find X, and it's going to be a function of S and T, and we find Z as a function of S and T, and we find P as a function of S and T. And so we find this. And I have to just remind you that, of course, ST is in Rn, because S is in Rn minus 1, and T is in R1. And that's very convenient. But the question is, and then that's nice, because that gives us a piece of solution. So we started on a characteristic strip, and then we moved a little bit and parameterized a surface and its tangent plane simultaneously for a little bit of t. What's the question? It's a surface in Rn plus 1 plus a piece of its tangent plane. And the question is it a graph? Where's u? Is it a graph? So the question is it a graph? So the last question. Is this a piece of surface in Rn plus 1, at least this piece of the surface in Rn plus 1, a graph? Well, let me make that more specific. That is, X of ST, Z of ST, a graph. Z is equal to u of x, but with the proper tangent plane, with dx of u equal to p. And if it is, you have a solution. And so let's at least try to invert x. So we try to invert x. So can we invert the map S T goes to x of S T, n variables to n variables? And we can, the answer is yes, if you look at if 0 is not the determinant of some Jacobian. So we have to look at the partial x partial ST map. And let's just look at what that Jacobian looks like. Well, it looks like the Jacobian determinant looks like what follows. Well, partial S of x, and I just want to study it at S0, when ST is S0, 0, all we have to study it locally. If at the point S0, 0, we can invert this map. So if this has a non-zero determinant. So what's the first bit? Well, that's partial SF. Because X at T equals 0 is given by F, right? That's our first coordinate specification of the characteristic strip at S0. And then the last variable is partial T of X. And then, remember, we're solving the characteristic ODE, so partial T of X, sorry, D by DT of X. D by DT of X. Well, it's confusion. D by DT of X. But according to this, our specification, that's partial P of F. So I just erase, and I have a partial P of F. And we need that to be non-zero. And we look, and we see, oh, we've already had that condition. That was the existence of the characteristic strip to begin with. So that's non-characteristic. If it's non-characteristic, then we can solve for a little bit of T. Okay, the one remaining question, and I'm going to stop. Proposition 3.1, can I find phi? It's exactly that condition. Sorry? All you do is check at S not 0. If it's non-zero at S not 0, then it's going to be non-zero nearby. Well, it's on zero, not 0 at a point, then you can invert nearby. And the remaining thing to check is P, and the remaining thing, lastly, check that P of T, but parameterized by S, and is equal to partial X of U at X of T parameterized by S. And that uses a chain rule, and I'm already way out of time, so I'm going to stop, and we need just a few minutes break. That's first order theory in n dimensions. Does it help? Maybe. It's a beautiful theory. It shows you the gap, among other things, and in particular, show you the gap between the rest of PDE and this sort of 19th century character stuff. Here we have a complete solution in a very special case. It's local. That's arbitrary F. So much more of the time we have to know, so much more of the character of the PDE when we go into, much more of the details of the PDE before we go into it. So maybe it's the last time we see something completely general. Anyway, part of the culture of the problem. Thanks so much, and let's have a short break. And then Andre is going to tell us about first-order quasi-linear equations, but global existence.